for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right. Welcome to the third hour of this live broadcast here, the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT. Today's news talk, an enlightening and entertaining conversation with our friend Basil Valentine in the previous hour. That was interesting. That was a wow. It's never a dull moment when we start the chin wag with Mr. Valentine. That's for sure. We're going to shift gears, however, to more breaking news and analysis here. You'd have to be living in a cave or on another planet not to have recognized and paying attention to what's going on over the last year in Europe, especially in the last couple of months. It's an absolute energy Armageddon. How on earth did this happen? How did we get here? Well, we've broken this down over the weeks and months on our different programs. And certainly Germany has played a central role in this, in the direction and the policies that they've taken there. And most recently, with the anti-Russian sanctions, has left Germany pretty much painted into a corner in terms of where it's going to get its energy to fuel, to power its amazing economy, European leading economy. But nestled right under Germany is another country. That's the country of France. And France has been quietly maneuvering and quietly doing a little dance in the background. But actually, this is very consequential, what's going on in France. I have to just set the scene here. France produces the majority of its power through its own nuclear generators. It's very unique in that, in terms of the world, it's the most nuclearized country in the world. And it's so much so that it even is able to export its surplus power. And somehow this equation is being reversed. How on earth can this happen? How has this been allowed to happen? It's unbelievable. Why would France relinquish? It's one thing in a crisis that could help it and its population weather the storm. These are the questions. What on earth is going on here? And to help us navigate this one, this very important story here, because it affects all of Europe and the West, in fact, and it's also a geopolitical story. Joining us is independent journalist from France, Freddy Ponton, on the line right now. Hello, Freddy. How are you?
Hi, Patrick. I'm fantastic. I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good here, but I'm a little bit concerned about what's going on in your part of the world, quite frankly. what on earth is this? I'm blown away by this story, Freddy, because I've always thought that no matter what happens in any of these other European countries, France is going to be all right, because France has a massive nuclear power fleet. And what you're saying here is not only is that whole fleet not online, but they're trying to basically power down France's nuclear. What on earth is going on here? Who's behind it? What's the agenda?
Well, I'll try to do my best. Never easy to go after Basil Valentine, but I'm sure I can come up with something that should be of an interest. And yes, this article that just been published was a very interesting article to put together, not only because we are looking at current events, looking into the energy crisis that is affecting obviously France, but also the rest of Europe. But in the meantime, in parallel, also entertaining some research with regards to the possible origins of what we are currently witnessing with our bare eyes. So very interesting journey for this article. And perhaps what I could do is start with 2018, because really for me, as far as I'm concerned, it takes us back to the Yellow Vest movement, where you have obviously all this distraction, but behind the scenes, something is brewing, if you will, where the government, President Emmanuel Macron and its administrations, are starting to announce very discreetly that a multi-year energy policy is actually in the meeting, and they actually announced that 40 nuclear reactors each producing around 900 megawatts of power, will be shut down by 2035. And that includes up to six reactors by 2030. So that's almost was unnoticed. And obviously the press barely talked about this event. But this was basically the launch of a campaign of turning, shutting down the electricity power and shut it down France as an energy and a leading supply of energy for the European Union. So it was interesting to see how and what decisions the government has made for the last past 4 years, looking into the past and seeing that one after the other, France will be was closing certain of these nuclear plants, like the Fessenheim nuclear plant, which happens to be at the French-German border. And that took place in 2020. And we are looking, obviously, into the reason why this, the reason that was provided to the people of France, why they needed to shut down this nuclear plant. And we were told that this is because of corrosions and therefore maintenance needed to apply. And that obviously takes a lot of time to do. So with the large amount of nuclear reactor that needed to be shut down, the maintenance work, well, France is finding himself right now on the back foot. And that's really from there we can build basically a better understanding as to what we are currently witnessing in France with the current Ukraine crisis, which has been blamed, you know, for all the problems that EU is facing at the moment, whether it's from an economic point of view or simply from an energy point of view. So it seems that everything is fits perfectly. And one could say that this is really part of an agenda, and that Macron was aware, not only aware of this agenda, but also was pretty much involved in this agenda from day one. So obviously, great concern because the French want answers. They're looking at France 4 years ago being on the top of its game, one of the largest producers of electricity. We export electricity to our neighboring countries. And today, we are falling absolutely short to a point that even the Germans are talking about restarting their nuclear plant, at least two of them, for this winter, because we won't be able to come to help them. So that's really pretty much a very dire situation, we can say that.
So this is incredible. And you mentioned the yellow vest movements. So you also point out in this article that there's a lot of subsidies, price caps, consumer prices are capped in France because EDF, Macron knows that if they didn't, that yellow vest would be just like a picnic in the park compared to the civil unrest that would come. But that those price caps come at a huge cost, don't they, to EDF? So this is the biggest power company in Europe, and they're totally underwater in debt. You've broken down some of these other sources of debt. I mean, the whole thing looks like it was, who could have not seen this coming years ago? Did they see it coming? Is this part of a plan or some kind of agenda? You talk about a controlled demolition of the economy.
Yes, that is correct. Yes. So obviously there is an agenda that is at play here. So we're looking into, first of all, the decentralization of electricity, which basically forced EDF in situations that are unbelievable. I mean, literally EDF lose 8 billion euro a year of income, okay, which basically normally should go towards the upkeep of nuclear power plants. And it leaves a huge hole in the budget of the company. And the reason for that, Patrick, is that because we have a reduced capacity at this moment in time, so we need to buy electricity on the open market around 1,000 euro for the megawatt. And then obviously we need to sell that energy back to the private sectors in France. And that is sold at 49 euros. So, I mean, if you do the calculations, you're basically selling at loss. And that loss represents around approximately 28 billion euros only this year. So Macron has no other choice, basically, to, like the banks, you know, they will announce that they are too big to fail, and they will basically say that we have to bail them out. And that's going to go through a different process. But at the end of the day, the taxpayers' euros money will be utilized to compensate. So it's a daylight robbery, absolutely daylight robbery. And it's been exposed. I mean, a lot of people in the oppositions are starting to ask really, really hard questions to Macron, because you can only explain it one way, is this was done on purpose. This is not an accident or a lack of vision. This was absolutely a plan in advance. And that's where people are starting to worry that there is a conspiracy from the Macron's governments, basically to destroy the economy and basically to destroy everything that France has to go for, including his electricity power and his nuclear technology, which was always at the forefront of the nuclear industry in the world. So we are behind where we should be leading. Basically, and being able to support our European, the European members countries, we should be able to be really at the point where people can rely upon our energy. And today, we're just behind, and the policies reflect exactly what I've just described. You know, with our new prime ministers, people responsible for the energies are starting to speak out, especially the president of EDF, the CEO of EDF. Really came forward, and his name is Jean-Bernard Lévy, and he came forward during a meeting. It's called the MEDEF meeting. It's all a bunch of French entrepreneurs that comes together each year, and they talk about basically big topics of economic and industry. And he literally was asked about, you know, what's going on with EDF, and it says it's not a matter, it's not a problem of expertise, it's truly a problem of labors, qualified labors that we don't have. We haven't recruited, we haven't trained them, simply because Macron told us to shut down the reactors and the plants. So we were getting rid of people instead of employing people and training them, so that today, even for the maintenance purposes, we could have these people on the ground, full expertise, full training, and in a few months' time, we could be back and running. But that's not the case, because nobody was employed. So it's a complete limbo. And this was completely denounced and exposed by the CEO of EDF, Electricité de France, the main supplier. Now, of course, Patrick, the interesting thing is the reaction of Macron. As soon as they heard Bernard Lévy talking about this and basically blaming it on him, well, this is it. This was the path to Macron's blacklist. And he announced about 2 weeks later that he will replace the CEO of EDF for whatever reason, but he wanted to get rid of him because the guys were starting to expose his nonsense. So that's where we are. They've actually found a new CEO already. I know his name. His name is Luc Rémont. Luc Rémont will come from, is actually the executive of Schneider Electric, and he's been put forward now to become the new CEO of Electricité de France. So very interesting how fast this has happened and how fast Macron cover up the agenda. And I'm amazed that this is still standing. You know, this should be directly, basically, a demand from the parliament for destitution, asking him to be removed from office, because that's high treason. I mean, you're basically shutting down the very livelihood of not only the economy, but people as well. And you're basically putting in danger not only the economy, but also the people of France. That's just simply unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, how is this even possible? I mean, they're hemorrhaging money. They have a monopoly. They're hemorrhaging money. I know this might have something to do with the completely deregulated wholesale energy market. That's one of the sources of this price volatility with gas, especially. Okay, that's a problem that needs to be dealt with at the root level. No one's talking about it, of course, because politicians don't like dealing with things at the root level, because that's bad for business, apparently. But this is going on. and you're literally, they have to sell a quarter of their production to private resellers in Europe. I mean, at cost, like making no money. Yes. Is that an EU deal? Is that because of Brussels?
Is that it one? Is Brussels. 100% Brussels pushing forward. You know, I mean, Macron is the vassal of Europe, you know, so he's going to do, and he's going to sell out whatever he needs to do to maintain his position as a key vassal of the European Union. And the European Union is a German European Union. So whatever we're going to do, like, for example, I just mentioned that in 2020, he shut down the reactor in Fessenheim, you know, which is just at the border of France and Germany. The only reason why he did it is he didn't need to do anything. They obviously said it was about corrosions and all that kind of things. But the reality, Patrick, is that he wanted to please the Ministry of Ecology in Germany, because they're obviously apparently anti-nuclear. And because of the proximity of this site, then obviously that was just not something that the German wanted to see. So he went along with whatever German European Commission's decide. So clearly we can see who's running the show in Europe, and it's certainly not France.
So how can people in France be anti-nuclear when France doesn't have any additional options or infrastructure for power? I mean, how can you take a position like that without, I mean, immediately any politician or anybody saying that should be shot down in the argument immediately and told to shut up, like you're talking nonsense. You know, how are people going to turn the lights on? But how is this allowed to even happen? I mean, everyone should have looked at Germany and thought, you guys are really, you're really stupid. You've shut down your nuclear plants it wasn't because there were safety problems per se. And France has probably a lot of safety protocols. But they probably have a lot of safety checks in place. So to say it's a safety problem, that could be true, but it's not like these problems can't be fixed. What's the alternative?
Well, there's no alternative, because we just came out of 5 years of Emmanuel Macron in the parliament, which basically bypassed the parliament on absolutely everything. So it's not like there's an open debate, and it really comes out of policies at the end of the day. The decisions are made amongst a very small committee, the close to Macron, and they make the decisions. And because they had the majority at the parliament, they just could do pretty much whatever they wanted. So even though people knew about what was going on, and they knew that we were, you know, obviously taking a big risk by doing and shutting down these reactors, there's nothing they could do. There was no basically fences. There is no watchdog that can come and have some form of power to stop this cynic agenda. So that's what it is. It's simply when you have literally a little monarch governing, absolutely no opposition whatsoever, and he controls the parliament and the senate and even the constitutional chambers, likely because they sign everything he comes up with. There's no contest for 5 years. So that's the direct result of Macron's policies. And also, more importantly, this goes in line with a much bigger agenda that is far bigger than just Macron. And that's really the second part of this article, Patrick, which is, I think, extremely interesting, because it put into context and it helps people understand what we are currently seeing today. Because a lot of it, I'm sure you would agree, that it just doesn't make any sense. You know, it simply doesn't make any sense to see a country shutting down these reactors and under the pretext of corrosions or maintenance. But to the point that now, at the first kind of a alert, because we have a little shutdown in terms of supply from Russia, which represents a very little percentage of the what they call the energy mix in France. You know, we got solar power, we got wind power, and we got 10% of our energy that comes from gas. So clearly, we're not dependent on the gas from Russia. So even if they shut it down completely, we are completely independent, and that is part of our national energy security, if you will, policy. So whatever happened outside, we are super independent, and that's the strength of France. And that is literally basically endangering that by the decision he has made. So we cannot blame anything on Russia because they do not affect the supply of energy and how we run our energy grid in France. So it's absolutely irrelevant to blame Russia from a French point of view. But what we can see here is that there is an attack on Europe coming from the United States. It's very clear to everybody that's following the latest development, and those more importantly, like myself and many others that have followed the geopolitics and the economy since the 1980s, where we were able to follow through over the years, you know, the unfolding of an agenda that is far sinister and far darker than anybody could have imagined.
Hold that thought. We're gonna look at that agenda. Sure. We're gonna look at that agenda on the other side. I'm here with Freddie Ponton, independent journalist from France. After the break, we'll get into this. The United States is attacking Europe on a very, very deep level. We'll learn more on the other side. This is Patrick Hennington. Listen to TNT. Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlmann.
German wealth depended to a large extent on this cheap energy that Germany got since at least the 60s, 70s from Russia while producing high quality material. So increasing from raw material to elaborated material. That is the foundation of the German economic miracle. 30% of the energy consumption they needed from Russia was always a thorn in the side of the American. So what we have now is that, for example, our Minister of Defense, Mrs. Lamprecht, said that Germany needs to take a more important role internationally. It should become a world power. And on the other hand, when they needed to be decisive in the Minsk agreements, they did nothing. There was no intention to press Ukraine into obeying the agreement. They bombed and shelled Donetsk, Luhansk for 8 years, and Germany did nothing really. They were not capable or not willing. I don't know.
The Dirk Pohlmann Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In times of fear, World Vision has been there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've stood with kids and families during some of the world's hardest times. Through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and support, helping rebuild lives, and empowering entire communities to lift themselves out of poverty. And we're doing the same today, because rising to these challenges is in our DNA. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, at home and abroad, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
This is today's News Talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
All right, everybody. We're into the third hour here, this live broadcast, broadcasting globally, TNT. Today's News Talk. If you are listening to us live, don't you worry if you miss any of the live broadcast. If you're tuning in midstream or you're dropping in and dropping out, don't worry. You will be able to get all of these segments and interviews. Just go to tntradio.live. That's the website. And host and show, and you'll see the listen back archives are there nicely and well organized and divided by segment and interview with the guests. Amazing archive, amazing service there is hosted up there on the website. And also, if you're listening live, we hope that you're listening live on the TNT Radio app. You can download that on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store as well. It's an amazing app, very responsive. I like it because it's a great user experience, and you can absolutely get a beautiful signal on that as well. Beautifully designed, great app. One of the great tools there for this listener-driven network. Everything about TNT is designed for the listener experience, which makes it totally unique in the world of radio. And we're also on the video sharing platforms like Rumble and most of the others. Just do a little search and you won't be long before you find TNT Radio. On the line right now is Freddie Ponton. He's an independent journalist from France. And Freddie, before the break, you were talking about Well, where we left it off, the U.S. is attacking Europe. There's something deep and geopolitical going on here, if we just look under the surface, right?
Yes, absolutely, Patrick. It's been going on for a very long time. It's just been something that has been progressing, mainly led by the neoliberals of the United States. But it's not necessarily bipartisan. It really doesn't matter really which political party is involved or is at the head of the United States. It's really relevant. It's really not the people that are calling the shots. The shots are called by organizations which people have come to call the deep state. These are the people that choose who is going to be placed in the government, embedded in the government to fulfill the aim of their agenda. And really what's really interesting is when you look into the current events, it's important to try to go back into history, the history of industrialization, the history of globalizations, and then obviously the various energy shock that we've been able to observe since during the 20th century. And really the one that really pops out really and really show exactly the huge amount of similarities, the oil shock of 1978-79. And that is really a great start to understand, or at least to better understand, the origins of the globalist orchestrated meltdown of the global economy, because this is what they've been planning since the 1980s. They've been planning on what they call the controlled demolition or the controlled disintegration of the global economy. Now, what does that mean and how does it fit, you know, for people to understand? Well, mainly, primarily, this is about a change of regime. If you move from one financial system, knowing that this financial system has a lifetime, and it's only a matter of time before the lifetime, you know, comes to an end, and the sea course of the fiat currency market is eventually going to collapse. So the people that put this together from day one, which are basically the trilateral commissions and the Council on Foreign Relations, they're starting to work on a plan, on a roadmap to control disintegrations of the financial system as well as the economy of the world in order to be the one in control for the next generation and, more importantly, for the next financial regime that they are trying so desperately to put in place. So it took them, as I say, you know, 60 years to do that, even more. And they've been working at it simply by, first of all, just at the end of the Nixon era, the CFR asked the Trilateral Commission to bring into the Carter administration key people, people like Paul Volcker and many other names. I mean, the article will give you a lot of breakdown on who's involved into that. But what's interesting is really to understand that CFR and Trilateral is really working together. Trilateral is responsible to embed the what we call the technocrats today, the technocrats that work for performing the agenda that is set forth by the Council on Foreign Relations, which is run by the Rockefellers and many other people, which we also tend to call the deep states today. So these are the architects of the globalization, but also the architect of the controlled demolition of the economy to ensure they're going to be in control of the next financial regime. That's basically, in a nutshell, what we are seeing. And the way we can prove it today is simply by going back to the documents and the various documents that have been basically put together, which I've called, and many today are kind of catching up with this, that I've called the blueprint of the Great Reset. So Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum, it's nothing new. This is just a name, a facade. But these are people that are basically working and putting together and basically operating a plan that was set forth in the 1980s by the Council on Foreign Relations. So they're just basically picking up the blueprint from this agenda. What is agenda's name is Project 1980s. So that's the name of this agenda. And it's got about 33 books. So it's quite a bit of a big read. I spent a month looking into this and really trying trying to see as what parts the Great Reset, what part of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum has taken from these blueprints and inserted it in their evil plans, you know, which we are saying today. And I think probably one of the most important chapter of this blueprint, it's the task force that was responsible for the economic meltdown. So how do you disintegrate a global economy? So you draw a lot of information from these documents. It allows to better understand how they structures the UN Agenda 2030. And then you obviously have a direct look into this Saturnian agenda and obviously the motivations of the architects of this agenda. So I think this article is going to provide a lot of answers to many people. It was inspired by the work that LaRouche has been doing for many, many, many years. You know, you don't have to believe anything. You know, you can listen to it, but more importantly, you have the ability to read the document from yourself. And these documents really provide you the policy of control for global disintegrations of the economy and the financial systems. And then it also provides you with really the insight from Paul Volcker, you know, which explained really what it meant by controlled disintegration. So that's going through the article. It provides you really with a timeline. It explained to you really what you're seeing today, where it comes from, and the reason behind it and how it was done. So we're not looking anymore for answers. We already have the answers, Patrick. They are available to us. All we need to know now is that how we can use this knowledge to fight back. And that's where I am in this article, looking at analysis and trying to understand where we go from there, because now we know what's going on.
Yeah, it's so funny, the title, Project 1980s. It's a funny title, but that was a sort of agenda. So what you're saying is this was preparing the ground for the Great Reset. So this is the globalist long-range plan. You're talking about a Rockefeller-funded plan that spans something like 60 years in total, if we really go all the way back.
Absolutely.
So the Schiller Institute is the research arm of the LaRouche organization. They've done amazing. They're famous for their research, by the way. They're just unbelievably good. But yeah, you've linked to some of the documents that we've pointed to on there, especially Volcker's speech. I mean, let's see, it's right there in black and white, Freddie. I mean, the speech he gave, the lecture in London, we've got a link to it here, but unbelievable alternatives to monetary disorder. So they're gaming out how to basically pull the plug on the economy. You know, different sort of strategies here. That's what it looks like.
Yes, I'll jump in this one, because really what's really interesting is, first of all, you see how the media plays a huge importance in everything we're saying today. Because when Paul Volcker, right, he's going to give his speech at the Coventry, at the Warwick University in Coventry, and he's going to give his speech that is called actually the famous Fred Hirsch speech. And this is where he's going to actually talk about the alternatives to monetary disorder, which is basically the blueprints of the economic side of the World Economic Forum Great Reset. So as I mentioned to you, 33 books, you get 10 to 13 task force that were delegated to produce basically a plan of action, some kind of guidelines, some kind of blueprints on how to disintegrate, control, demolish basically the global economy and also the financial system. So if you really look at the Great Reset, it's really Fred Hirsch, you know, it's really, there's actually three guys. You got Fred Hirsch, you got Michael Doyle, and you got Edward Morse. These are the three people that's going to contribute to the alternative to monetary disorder documents and book. And it's a complete survey. It's a complete basically recipe on how to melt it down while you're still controlling and keep complete control of the financial system. And of course, of what the economy that is going to collapse is going to provide you, because, you know, it's Waterloo 2.0. You're going to tell the people, look, it's not our fault. The economy was bad. It went down. We got a war. We got the virus. We got coronavirus. It's the fault. They're going to blame everything, everybody, to say that this is not us. It just happened. But we're going to provide you with a solution. So you You're going to come up with a digital, basically, currency that's going to provide you control not only of the financials, but also of the people. And on the other side, you're going to be able to buy pretty much everything, because everyone, if we let them do it, they're going to basically bring Europe and the United States to their knees. When I mean to their knees, it's not talking about a recession. We're talking about a depression, or at least a supra recession, something that we will not recover, which means that companies, people that have worked through generation building companies, you're going to look at the industrial sectors. When you read the book, it explains to you the economic of the industry of Germany, how it's important, explaining how this is all going to melt down. And it's only going to melt down because we're going to cut the energy supply, okay, to these countries. So that's really quite unbelievable. When you're putting together an article like this, you can read in the 1980s that these guys were already talking about melting down, controlled demolitions of the industrial sector of Europe. We know that Germany is the lung of the economy of Europe. So they are going straight to the jugular, and they're going to stop the energy coming into Germany. So you can explain how you want what happened in the Baltic Sea, you know, with Nord Stream 1 and 2. You know, this is not coincidence. You know, you don't need even to mention who did it, because if you know, and if you read the documents that I provide in this article, you will understand the only people that benefit from that are the people that are on board of this agenda. And they're not just only American. Obviously, we have our own traitors in Europe that are happy to demolish everything. I don't know what they were promised, but certainly a place on the globalist spaceship or whatever. But they're going to be definitely placed somewhere of importance.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Globalist spaceship or a place on Epstein's private jet. You know, just take your pick. There, I'm here with I'm here with Freddie Ponton. We're breaking this down. The planned takedown of the European economy. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. You listen to TNT Today's News Talk. We're going to just take a short station break here, and we'll be right back.
Are you ready to start paying for climate reparations? Yes, that is apparently a thing.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Pakistan's climate minister demands climate reparations due to bad weather. Pakistan's climate minister said historic injustices have to be heard, and there must be some level of climate equation, adding, global warming is the existential crisis facing the world, and Pakistan is ground zero. Okay, how to respond? First off, there is no increase in extreme weather on timescales globally. Hasn't happened. 30, 50, 100-year timescales, extreme weather, hurricanes, floods, droughts, tornado, wildfires have either been no trend or declining trends. If anything, the truth is that as carbon dioxide has risen in the atmosphere, extreme weather has declined. So the case for climate reparations is non-existent. But this isn't about the science, it's politics. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
When the forgotten poor are in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, a floating hospital staffed by volunteers, heroes of mercy who donate their time to save lives.
Every human has the right to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org.
The truth is out there. All the other stations suck.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, everybody. All right. Welcome back to the final segment of the final hour of this live broadcast here on Thursday. We're at TNT. Today's News Talk. You are here. You're in the right place. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. I've got Freddie Ponton with me from France, Freddie. And, you know, among the things, well, I'll let you finish your previous thought, but what I really want to talk about here in your article, by the way, let's direct people to 21stcenturywire.com. And the headline here by Freddie Ponton, Chaos by Design, the Roots of the EU Energy Crisis and France's Green Deception. I think that's Germany's green deception, Europe's green deception, the West's green deception, full stop. Freddie, what is this? They're talking about a energy weather report in France. They're going to sort of turn your energy consumption into something like the weather, I feel like the state is playing God here, which you've sort of alluded to in this article. I mean, who do these people think they are? What is this? The energy weather report? Explain this.
Yes, it's a really weird thing. I don't know who could come up with something so silly, but what they've decided to do is basically to create a joint venture between France Television and RTE, which is the electricity transport network in France. So what these guys have done is the television is coming is going to join basically the electricity transport network, to create a weather forecast of electricity. So what they mean by that is that they want basically the French people stuck in front of their television all day to see in real time the level of electricity available in the country. So what they're going to do?
Oh my God!
Are you
serious?
I know it's really hard, you know, even for me, it hurts me to say that. And even it goes further because what they decided to do is a bit of like the Chinese social credit, but it's a bit different. They're going to use a color scheme, you know, three colors, green. So when it's green, everything is good. We have electricity. You can spend electricity. You can actually, use your microwave. But then when it gets orange, it stands so that at that time you don't use your washing machine, you don't use your you don't use your microwave and so on. And then when it gets red, it's very tense, they say, and it's basically synonymous to unavoidable blackouts. So it's really basically telling you that load shedding is coming to France. So we move from the first world country to a third world country in one winter because someone couldn't plan anything. Or we are told they couldn't plan anything. Of course, it was planned. And of course, as I explained earlier, this was all part of the plan from all along, you know. So they're going to ask people first to reduce consumptions. They're going to try not to cut, basically, the electricity in people's house because, obviously, you will have a civil war in your hand to deal with. So you won't have to worry about electricity. But so what they're really after here is the companies. They are after the businesses, the small and medium-sized enterprises, and they are here to basically deindustrialize. So that's what they are after. They're not after the people. They're after the companies. They're after making sure that all the smelter, all the foundries of France and Germany and Holland and Italy and Spain, all this, they want it to be completely out of business. Some of those already foundries and smelters have reduced the capacity from 50%. For two reasons. One, because the price of the raw material is to the roof. And then on the other end, what you have is obviously a planned electricity cost that's going to go to the roof too. So they know that their bill is going to be unaffordable. So they don't want to get to that point. So they already reduced their operations. And we can see it really targets the zinc foundries, the aluminiums, and mainly the metal as well. So they're definitely also after the construction business as well. So it's a real deindustrialization plan, which fit absolutely 100% in what I was able to read, part of this project 1980s. It's deindustrialization and get these countries basically to a level of poverty, a level of dependency that they are basically have no other choice but to sell out or to, you know, basically stop all activities or reduce activities to a very bare minimum, which is not survivable in the current global economy. So that's what we are saying. And that's what the EcoWatt is. It's about to let you know, you know, how much electricity and how much, you know. And so it's like a bit the pandemic when they, you know, every day they were announcing death. Here they're going to announce, you know, how much electricity you've left before you start to freeze to death, you know. So it's quite unbelievable. I mean, this is so, you know, woke. It's crazy.
No, so it's like, with the pandemic, today's number of cases and infections has risen.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to lock down this town, this city, this county. And so, I wouldn't rule out climate lockdowns are pretty much, because this is the system, isn't it? This is how you modulate the behavior of the public, right? You've got this system here.
Yep.
And so they could easily move to climate lockdowns if they wanted to, you know, ramp it up a little bit, right?
I think so, yes. I think definitely we could see that. But I think more importantly, I think it's a psychological. It's to prepare people's mind to get used to be controlled as far as consumption. So we're talking more about going towards probably we had the vaccination pass, the sanitary pass. Now we're going to go to the energy pass. So again, we're moving people towards, you know, in the psychology of it is to prepare minds to say, look, you need to be responsible. You need to be moderate with regards to your consumptions. And therefore, we're going to tell you that depending on which color you need to tell, you go left or you go right, or you put the light on or you switch the light off. It's complete infantilizations of the population because they're going to come up with this energy pass. This is part of the mega digital wallet. You're going to have the health, you're going to have the electricity, the energy consumptions, and they're going to see whether you're a good citizen or not. You know, it's social credit system. They're not hiding it. They're telling you this is where you want. We want you. We want you in these smart cities. We want you to be completely under the digital control of our artificial intelligence software, and that's it. So you don't need an interaction between the globalists, between these people and the population. They're cutting basically this. They're creating not a fence, but actually they're digging a trench in between themselves and the populations. And what's going to be between you and them is a digital interface. And how we know that, Patrick, is because we look at the money. And when you investigate the money, for example, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we asked the government where the money, where 600 billions of the French taxpayers' money is gone. And Macron told, well, it's all gone to the pandemic. But then obviously when we're breaking down the numbers, we realize that only 135 million billion has gone towards the pandemic. So where the rest of the money went, well, it went to build the digital infrastructures to accommodate this agenda. Because after the disintegration, there's going to be a need a tool of control, and it's going to be a digital, interface. That's what we're going towards, and everything points in this direction, Patrick.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What you say makes absolute sense. So this is a technocracy. To also allude back again to the work of Patrick Wood, who we had a nice extended conversation with at the Sunday Wire a couple of weeks ago, and he's been researching the trilateral commissions, and he pointed out, and I think you've kind of reinforced that in your article here on 21st Century Wire, that the trilateralists, really, if you look at it, not directly, but they seem to be the hand behind the creation of the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab. And Klaus Schwab's mentor is none other than Henry Kissinger. And Henry Kissinger was a main trilateralist. And Zbigniew Brzezinski was also very influential in this dialogue too. So we see the Trilateral Commission. So yes, the Trilateral Commission have implanted their people through these various means, some of this through the democratic process, but also through the World Economic Forum. There's trilateralists in all these key positions. Isn't that incredible? It's like a secret club.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a secret club, but it's also well planned, you know, because the CFR is really the policymakers. They are the one that's basically the brain of the outfit. The Trilateral Commission is more about the implementations of the policy of the plan.
That's right.
So that's what the Wood is described, you know, when he talks about the technocracy movement, he explains that the Carter era, and he's absolutely 100% right. This is the time where these globalists, these key players of the CFR was basically identified, like Paul Volcker, for example, and he's going to be placed directly as the chair of the Fed. And the first thing he does when he comes in, he moves away from the gold-backed currency. And this is basically the birth of globalization and the birth, basically, of the fiat currency as well. So on one side, he's basically kind of congratulated by everybody. Obviously, the media played a role into that as the savior, because we're talking about a super inflation in 1971 all the way up to 1980. So we have the super inflations, and someone needs to save the day. And that's going to be Paul Volcker. the very same person that basically has from day one basically imposed the deindustrializations upon the US economy, and the very person also that has really transformed also the agriculture, you know, he's the creator of what I call the agriculture and the food cartel. That's Paul Volcker behind all that. He's been extremely instrumental. Obviously, this is not happening just with him. There's a lot of people involved in that, which names we have. But clearly, we can see in the documents how all this is part of really what they've done. And I'm going to tell you why we know that. Because on August 26, 2022, there was a speech that was delivered by the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. And he was addressing the topic of price stability and how to deal with the current inflations, what are the control tools that are at our disposal, and really, literally entertaining the possibility of using the Volcker magic wand, you know, the Volcker techniques, you know, to sort out the problem. And what is the Volcker technique but the control disintegrations of the economic system, the food system, the agriculture system, and eventually, ultimately, to the financial system they have ripped apart, basically.
No, it's not exaggeration. It's not an exaggeration. Right. You've done very well to lay a lot of this out in your piece here at 21st Century Wire. And again, I really encourage people to take a look at this, Chaos by Design, the Roots of the EU Energy Crisis and France's Green Deception. So my last question here, we just got a couple minutes left, Freddie, and I'll give you the floor. We're going to wrap it up at the top of the hour. What is the way out here? Because is there still a chance to delay, to disrupt, to change course on this? Where do we stand as a people?
As a people, we need to recognize that what is currently happening is the fruit of a very, very long and a very old plan. A cartel of people coming together, which have basically accumulated a huge amount of wealth for the past 80 years, people that have created war and genocide around the world. People, we have an agenda which at the top of the agenda is controlled depopulation and stopping weapons of mass destruction. So when you understand that, and in an article you will see, I'll explain how that's worked, how Henry Kissinger's in 1974, explain in his National Security Study Memorandum 200 how basically he intend and how he identify basically population growth as a national security threat to the United States and to the world. So he's basically telling the rest of his colleagues, you know, from the foreign relation, the CFR, is telling them basically that there is a need and to take measures to reduce birth rates and increase death rates, and this need to be entertained. And then in another document, it says basically that we must not be concerned by human rights. Right. And that comes directly from the Rockefeller people. They're telling, if we put this agenda together, human rights cannot be of concern because it will fail. So these are the kind of people you're dealing with. So to answer your question as how we deal with that, well, how do you deal with people that want to kill you, your family, your grandparents, your kids, and everybody around you, everybody that is a useless eater to the planet, as they call us? How do you deal with these people? Well, there's only one way to deal with these people, is basically to shut down your television, drop your telephone and go on the street and start to talk to your own people. Because you see, this is when true leadership appears. There's no true leadership to that. It doesn't exist. It's so rare. We don't get to see it anymore. Not our generations. So what people need to do is basically to recognize themselves as, are they leadership material? Are they leaders material? Are they leaders of tribe? Because if you are a leader of tribe, well, you want to go out there. You want to go, whether you live in a village, if you live in a big city, in a town, in a capital city, it doesn't matter. You got to go on the street and you got to start to talk to your people and tell them, look, We know what's going on. We've got the proof. We have the document. We know what they're doing to us, and it's happening right now. And that's how you become a leader. You talk to your people. But if everybody stays separated in their little box, in the comfort of their little home, they have a little bit of food in the fridge, they still have electricity, you know. So, you know, nobody talks to each other. We are alienated from each other. Then they are winning. Every time this is happening, they are winning. The moment we come together as once, as people, like we used to do back in the days, on the street, talking to each other, having a little meeting, an hour a day, outside, on the place, in the square, and having a little lead chat, and then get the people and more people, inviting more people until we can have thousands of people talking to each other, and then looking at what and proof and evidence and doing really, it's not a political speech. It's just showing the evidence of what we know is happening and what is done to us.
Thank you, Freddie Ponton. Again, check out the article at 21stCenturyWire.com. Amazing work. Take care, Freddie. Really appreciate this.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. Goodbye.
There he goes. Top of the hour news headlines. Hesher, Brian McLean next. TNT, today's news talk.